So, translating telephone calls to spreadsheet. This is a presentation of a study that I did as a postdoc at ATP. And before I dig into it, I would like to just take a brief minute to talk about the starting point of this study. So the setting is Udbetaling Denmark, and I will come back to that in a little bit. It's a public authority that has developed digital self-service applications for a number of areas, in this case, maternity and paternity benefits. And the problem, as we also heard from Willem previously, is that citizens do use these self-service applications, but surprisingly, they keep calling for help. And that was sort of the focus of my my PhD thesis, my industrial PhD. Why do they keep calling, right? And the question is then, what do we do about it as authorities? It could also be for private companies, insurance companies, banks, telco operators, and so on. How do we get insights into why people keep calling, and what can we do about it? So, looking more particularly at this setting, I know there are maybe not every one of you is familiar with Udbetaling Denmark or Disbursement Denmark. Udbetaling Denmark was established in 2012 to administer public benefits within a variety of areas, such as pensions, family benefits, maternity and paternity leave. And the areas that were chosen were those that were, quote-unquote, objective in nature. So it was benefit areas that were seen to be ready for mass production, automation, and so on. In 18, they administered 222 billion kronas to 2.4 million recipients. So this is really a lot of money to a large part of the Danish populations. And the incentive to establish Udbetaling Denmark was, first of all, economic. So there were savings made through economies of scale, stordriftsfordele, and centralization, basically by taking municipal caseworkers and moving them to these five centers across Denmark. Also savings through the procurement of new IT systems and by breaking up the monopoly of the former supplier, through automation, and then through mandatory digitization. And to the best of my knowledge, Denmark is the only country in the world that has mandatory digitization for its citizens. I know there are other countries that have for the Netherlands, Norway, for businesses, but I haven't heard about other countries having mandatory digitization for citizens, at least not yet. I know there are a lot of that are looking towards Denmark. So that's just a little bit about the setting. If we look at maternity and paternity leave in particular, then when people are going on maternity or paternity leave, they often say, in Danish, it's jeg skal på barsel. And we look at this barsel or maternity, paternity leave as like one holistic unit, like one long period where we're just having time of our life at home, drinking coffee, listening to the radio. But in reality, it actually consists of a number of different benefit schemes. And Sarah will get into that, and I will also show you a little bit about these different benefit schemes. And that's sort of the underlying complexity in this. What happens when you go from one benefit scheme to another? How much money do you then get? What happens if you go from maternity leave to paternity leave, so from the mother to the father? How does that influence the family income, and so on and so forth? And approximately 110,000 new parents every year receive these benefits. And it's also something that we do quite rarely. We don't have that many children. And that's also something that's tied to this particular setting and to this particular context, is that we're dealing with low-frequent events. We don't retire that often, we don't get divorced that often, and so on and so forth. So learning is difficult here because it's not something we do very frequently compared to, for instance, paying taxes online, which we do every year. And then the challenges, well, I've already mentioned that people keep calling. That's sort of the main challenge. And what we're seeing, as Willem said, and as I also have studied, is that the ones that are calling are not just those that are not online, but it's also those who use the digital channels that are calling. And now they call about different issues. And Udbetaling Denmark received 2.2 million calls in 2018, so that's also quite a lot of telephone calls. And the irony is that we actually do have the software for registering calls. That software is in place, but when I was looking at the registration rates, they were really, really low, so they were between 10 and 50%, depending on when the registration was done. And when I looked at the categories, they were almost incomprehensible to me. So there was just a word or two really trying to describe what these calls were about. So that was something that we wanted to do something about, and that is basically what this specific study that I'm presenting now is about. How do we increase the registration rates, and how do we get better data? And For us in academia, well, as Willem said, we need explanations for why citizens change or add their channels. We need insights into the multiplex behavior. And we need the tools, the method, and the data to create this knowledge, basically. So this is an overview of the research process in this study. I'm not going to go through all of it. And this is inspired by a really interesting study that was done in the Netherlands in 2010, where they actually collaborated with caseworkers to generate insight and to change the caseworkers' behavior towards the citizens. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start here with the empirical studies that I conducted. So while I was doing my postdoc, I traveled around to the various centers of Udbetaling Denmark and ATP, and I listened in on telephone calls. And this is something that, I don't know, where is CERN? Here somewhere, CERN Skorup. This is something that was inspired by CERN Skorup, and he had conducted a similar method in a citizen service center, so it was Borger Service, where he was introducing himself and then following citizens around and then asking what was going on. So what I did was I sat next to a caseworker, and then when the citizen made the call, the caseworker would introduce me and ask for their permission for me to listen in on the call. And also say that it was completely anonymous, it would not influence their, it was voluntary, and it would not influence their case in any way. And then afterwards, so I would listen to the call, make a few notes, and then I would ask the citizens questions in the actual context. So these were in situ interviews where I was talking to the callers as they were calling. And that gave me some really valuable insights. So this took place in March 2017, and I did about 50 of these observations on maternity and paternity leave in the city of Vordingborg. And I also looked at I analyzed some channel traffic, in and outbound traffic. I looked at some of the documents that the citizens would receive. So not the specific letter, but that type of letter that they would receive in that situation, and also the website text. And that gave me a perspective of the customer journey from the perspective of the citizen, right? So what are they being exposed to? What are they seeing? And being there also gave me the opportunity to discuss and validate my results with the caseworkers and with management, and gave me really this in-depth understanding of the problem from which is causing calls from the perspective of the citizen. The problem, of course, is that it's quite a low number of observation. It's high for a qualitative study, but for a quantitative study, it's really low. So we wanted to see if we could scale that up. And that brings me to the next part of the research process, where I think over the summer of 17, we were contacted by management from Vordingborg, and they asked if we could help them to reduce calls. And my colleague Mette, and I, you will hear from Mette later, we traveled down to Vordingborg, and we brought this initial registration template with us. So we wanted to improve the data that we had, and Willem also mentioned that, the problems with these registration templates. So we wanted to improve the data that we had. We wanted to improve the share of calls that got registered, and we wanted to create a joint understanding of what these problem people have are. So based on some of my initial insights and based on some of Mette's insight, we created this first version of the template. So basically what happens is when the caseworkers have completed a call, there's a pop-up window on their screen, and then they have to do these two registrations of what the call concerns. That's all the system allows, just two. And that's actually a benefit because it forces you to be really specific about what you want. So what we did for maternity and paternity leave is that we split it into two levels. And the first level, that covers where the caller is in this process. So is it before childbirth? Is it after? Is it after the maternity, paternity leave, and so on and so forth? And there's five steps there. And then the second level covers the most important topic of the telephone call. And a telephone call can mean many different things, and it can also evolve, but we instructed the caseworkers to code the most important topic. If they had difficulty with that, we asked them to choose a topic that they had the conversation had started with. So that was what we took with us to Vordingborg in October 17. And then we were there for 3 days, for three whole days, and we were, like I said, we were invited in by management. So we really had management support right from the start, and that is, of course, a huge advantage when we're doing something like this. And then basically we spent 3 days there with the caseworkers, collaborating and then continuously improving this template to ensure that it was their wording in there, that it was their examples, it was their categories. So they felt ownership of this registration template. And the team there consists of two different sections with a total of 48 caseworkers, and they are answering calls on a rotation basis. So like I said, we introduced ourselves, management introduced us, and then we introduced the purpose of this, and they also knew that they wanted to reduce calls. And we just kept working on this template, and I will show you the procedure on the next slide. The point is that we want to engage the caseworkers in this process. We want them to understand the importance of why we're doing this and not just what they have to do. And we wanted this to be their product, right? This should be their examples, their categories, their names, that it should be directly related to their actual work context. We had a number of joint sessions to promote discussions and learning. And then also by being in context, and I'll give you an example of that also, that also afforded us to look at what the system looks like when it's actually live. So rather than us sitting in one city in Hillerød with a sort of a management perspective on this, we were actually there in the context looking at the system and what it looks like at the caseworker screen. So that gave us their perspective on this, and it also allowed us to solve a number of technical problems that we could have not foreseen from Hillerød. And the schedule looks something like this. So this could be, say, the second day. We did this for 3 days, like I said. In the morning, our colleague Neil, the technician in Hillerød, would upload the latest version of the template to the telephone system. And then we would print these templates, and we would have a joint presentation for the caseworkers. And I remember we marked all the changes in red, so they had an easy overview of all the changes that were made. And then we would just discuss and get feedback from the caseworkers, and we would note if they had any suggestions for any alterations. And then during the day, as they were receiving calls, we would be there with them, and we would make observations, we would solve technical issues. And then in the afternoon, we had a select group of caseworkers where we had a discussion and feedback session. So they would come to us with suggestions for altering this template. And when we agreed on the next version, we would submit that back to Neil in Hillerød, and then that's just basically what we did. So this is not rocket science, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And we did this for, this took us 3 full days. And maybe you can do it in 2, but I think you have to be very, very careful about underestimating the amount of effort that something like this takes. And I think one of the reasons why you get poor data is because you underestimate exactly this effort. So it's really, really important that the caseworkers are engaged in this and participate, and it's their template, it's their wording, it's their example, so they have ownership. And we absolutely experienced that while we were there. And that brings me to this, which is the final version of the registration template. And it looks sort of the same as the first version that I showed you. Again, we have these two levels. We have the situation of the citizen who is calling, and then we have the various topics. And I've just noted a couple of different areas that were changed. Well, more changes were made also, but these are some of the changes that were made based on the suggestions for the caseworkers. So one thing is this. If you look to the left, you see this thing, ikke lønstop, and then again in the middle, it says lønstop. So that is salary stop, and this was a concept, a term that was used by the caseworker. I didn't know that term going down to Vordingborg, and Mette is also shaking her head, but that was something that was important to them. This was a specific concept that had meaning in the work context and in the work practice of the caseworker. So that went on there. We also decided to add this question concerning technical support. And Sarah will also show you some of the findings in that regard. And I think that's actually also a main finding of this study. Because previously, when we were talking about digitization and we've been discussing the adoption of digital services, we've always regarded it as a matter of digital literacy, right? Well, people have to learn how to use websites and so on and so forth. And that, for this group at least, that was basically not an issue at all. So very, very few calls about that. And if you look at the remaining areas, planning, monthly payment, status on casework, salary stop, then those are issues pertaining to the task that the citizen have to do, right? The digital skills are not important here. They're administrative skills. That's really important. Because people are supposed to be their own caseworker, but they're not trained for it. So that's basically what some of these categories show. And then I promised to talk about some of the technical problems that we observed. This is just an example of that. This is the plan order that we had intended the registration template to be in, following this paternity process, right? And this is the order at the way it looked like for Neo, our technician. So here it is alphabetically on his system. And this is basically the view we would have on this if we stayed in Hillerød. This was how we planned it to be, and this is the way it looks like for Neo. And then I think it was on Thursday, midday, Meta came to me with her cell phone and said, "Hey, Kristin, have a look at this. This is all wrong. The order is all wrong." And we also discovered sometimes that some of the categories would appear that should not be there. There were some old categories in there and so on. And with the reason why we could discover this, because we were there. We were in the context, right? And in this case, you see this notion of Ikkevording Borg is in the middle. And we wanted that to be at the bottom because there were other centers who were answering calls about maternity and paternity leave. And it was really important that they did not participate in this study. So it was important that it was at the bottom because then it's easy to hit with a mouse. So that's the level of problems we're dealing with, right? It's very, very practical issues. And we couldn't figure out why this was. And then it turns out that it's listed chronologically according to the latest update. And our technician, Neo, again, he figured it out. Of course, Neo figured that out. So that's just a small example of the importance of being in context. And we solved there were other technical issues that we solved as well. And that brings me to the final part, which is the actual registration. And then Sarah will present to you what this study actually shows then. So 10,000, when we were done, 10,500 calls were registered in a period from October to November 2017. We had originally planned to register call for 4 weeks, but the caseworkers themselves suggested that we extended the period to 8 weeks. And I'm really proud of that, and that shows their level of commitment. And they were really, really interested in this. And the registration rates, which had been between 10 and 50%, previously they rose to between 90 and 95%. And then the results, and we will hear more about this later also, they were used at a workshop along with results from other studies. And they were also used for strategic decision-making, and you will hear more about that. They were used for developing call phrases, for website text, they inspired new applications, and so on. And then we returned to Vordingborg afterwards to thank the caseworkers and discuss the findings with them also, because they were really invested in this, like I said, so this was also interesting to them. And in January 2018, we repeated this method at another division, the claims division, Opkrævningsafdeling, and we got similar results. So this is a proven method, and we've proven that this method works. So some of the key lessons here, I think the first lesson is that data does not fall out of the sky, and they're rarely just collected. They have to be generated. And as you generate data, as you work with something like with this, you realize also all the assumptions that you have that go into this, right? The various categories that we choose for a specific purpose that influences this data. And then it's absolutely necessary to collaborate, and you mentioned this also, Willem, to collaborate with the caseworkers and have management backing if you're going to succeed with this. Because otherwise you're just going to get what we had before, where we had very low registration rates. So it's important to collaborate, and it's important for the caseworkers to know why they're doing this. We had these iterative development where we kept working on the template because we are not subject matter experts, so we could not know how to best do this. So we kept working on it, tested it in the actual use context. And then we had these joint discussions to promote engagement and learning to ensure that everybody perceived the various problems in the same way and that there was a joint way of classifying these calls. When we do academic studies, we have this notion called intercoder reliability, which measures the reliability of two scholars when they are, say, analyzing a text. So this was something that would increase, at least, the intercoder reliability. And then some of the outputs from this. We have the template itself with the categories and examples. To me, the most important part about this is that it's not just the data, but also the joint understanding of this category in the division. Having a joint understanding of what kind of problems people have and a joint framework for understanding this. Then there's the method, of course, and then there's the data that Sarah will present to you in a little bit. And then returning to the initial questions, the implications. If we're going to succeed with digitization and IT projects, we need subject matter experts, in this case, the caseworkers. We need to include them in these processes. And then, and you'll also hear more about that later, 100% self-service, that's not possible, and it might not even be optimal. And sometimes we find that telephone calls is the most cost-effective channel. And we tend to forget that when we just focus on the isolated channel cost rather than looking at the entire service journey holistically. That was it. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Christian. I would like to ask you, when you when you go into a project like this, do you beforehand have the idea that man is rational? And on the other side of the project, thinking, gee, how complex we are as human beings. Do you understand what I'm
No, not really.
No, well, because when a client calls and wants to have a problem solved, do we behave rational? Or because you say they keep calling, although it's a lower amount of calls, they still keep calling, although perhaps many of them shouldn't do so. So is
no, they're behaving perfectly rational from their point of view.
Okay.
The problem is we're trying to impose the sort of a systemic or organizational rationality on them, and I think that's also the one of the findings in the 2008 paper that you did, where you looked at what the organization wants on one hand, and then what citizens want on the other. And those two things don't really match necessarily. Yeah.
So who's the most rational? That has to be the client, or what?
I'm a qualitative scholar, so I have to say yes to that one. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's perfectly rational from the citizen point of view to behave the way that they're doing and to ask the questions that they're asking, because they have problems that are not solved. They get presented to contradictory information. They find themselves in a situation where they're asked to go online, but they're unable to solve the task there that they're supposed to, or they're not certain, having solved it, they don't get any receipts or any sort of evidence that the task in question has been solved. Yeah. So there's absolutely nothing irrational about their behavior. They have a task that they want to solve, and they go about however way they can to solve that task.
So actually, you perhaps at the beginning you were speaking two different languages, and you have to understand each other. That's the problem.
Yes, one of the main problems is that we have kept thinking that this is about digital literacy, and it isn't. It's about administrative literacy.
Exactly.
It's about the skills required to do these kind of things yourself. And sometimes when you find yourself in, you know, a life-changing situation, such as divorce, or somebody has died, or you're having a child, or so something that is of utmost importance to you, right? So you want to be sure, or in this case, maternity, paternity leave, that's the sole source of income for these people in this period. So it's really important for them that everything is correct and they get their money.
Yeah.
So I don't think to them it's not irrational to have an extra telephone call just to ensure that everything is right. But if you scale that up to, you know, 2.4 million recipients of Udbetaling Danmark services, that adds up.
Exactly. Yes. We'll get back to you, Christian, in a while.